From the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, I'm Todd Gleason. This is the closing market report for the 11th day of November 2011. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, we'll continue that conversation with Dan Bossi from AgriSource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. Along the way, your director of agricultural programming, Dave Dickey, will be here with a view from the Hill as Congress and the Super Committee wrestle with the writing of the 2012 Farm Bill. And it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media, from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat at $6.16, down 4 cents. The March at $6.46, down a penny. And July of next year at $6.76, 4.25 cents lower. December corn futures, $6.37 3/4, 7 3/4 lower. March at $6.48 3/4, down 6. The May at $6.53, down 8 3/4. July corn futures, $6.57 3/4, down 5 3/4 on the afternoon. December futures of next year, $5.74, 8.5 cents lower. November bean futures, $11.65 for the day, up 7. January at $11.79, 11.5 higher. The March at $11.88, up 10 3/4. And May soybeans, $11.96, up 9 for the afternoon. July, $12.02, 5.5 cents a bushel higher. Next year's November at $11.91, up 5.25 for the day. Bean meal futures finished December at $300 even, up $2.10. Bean oil at $51.02, that finished up 50 cents for the afternoon. Live cattle futures nearby contract, December futures on the day, $120.55 per 100 pounds, down $1.05. February at $122.72.5, 92.5 cents lower. November feeder cattle on the day, $142.15, 7.5 higher for the day. January at $145.67.5, unchanged. And December lean hogs in Chicago at the CME Group, 400 pounds, finished up at $86.45. They were finished 70 cents higher on the day. Outside markets very quickly look like this on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average just about 267 points higher at 12,161. Crude oil at 98.97, up $1.19. Now here's the weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area as it comes from the National Weather Service for today. Veterans Day, sunny, a high near 52 degrees, south-southwest winds at 14 to 16. They'll gust all the way to 25. Tonight, mostly clear, a low of 37. South-southwest winds between 10 and 14, gusting to 21. On Saturday, mostly sunny skies, a high of 59. Breezy, a south-southwest wind at 10 to 13, increasing to between 10 and 22. Winds could gust as high tomorrow as 29. And then on Saturday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 50 degrees, breezy south-southwest winds at about 22 miles an hour, gusting to 26. Sunday, a chance of showers set at 30%. Mostly cloudy skies, a high of 62. Breezy, a south-southwest wind between 20 and 28, gusting to 39. And on Sunday night, a 30% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a low of 47 degrees. Monday, a 50% chance of showers, partly sunny, a high of 59. Monday night, showers, partly cloudy, a low of 41. And on Tuesday of next week, mostly sunny skies, a high near 56 degrees. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and a low of 37. By the time we get to Wednesday, sunny, a high of 53. Wednesday night, cloudy, low of 34. And on Thursday of next week, mostly sunny skies, a high near 46 degrees.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line with us, as usual, Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Mike, thanks so much for taking the time to visit with us today. Can you take a look back over the previous week and tell me what was of most interest to you in the commodity markets from the CME Group or the outside markets?
I think probably the most interesting feature, Todd, is that we have been kind of caught in an almost time warp or time trap from October. And I will go back maybe a little bit farther and say that since October 14th, the December corn has essentially been unchanged since these last two reports have come out. And November beans, however, have sunk about $1.13. And I think that really points out the disparity between the effect of the outside markets, meaning the copper and the currency markets especially, on how the beans take the most amount and pick up the most sensitivity from the outside markets, whereas the corn has seemed to hold its value much better because it's more sensitive to the domestic market, and that basis in corn continues to promote the idea that we're not going to lose as much of our premiums because USDA once again reduced supplies. Now, having said that, I think it's pretty important now that we've gotten the November report out of the way that we've got two reports in a row where the USDA has cut supply, production of soybeans, and the beans have fallen. And so now I think we're at a point that if the corn's going to go any higher, we're really at that point where it's going to be up to the beans, especially in the short term, and to a lesser degree the wheat, and we can talk about that if you want. But really the beans are the heart and soul, I think, of the corn being able to go up any higher when it comes to the futures market. And I think USDA's report also said and confirmed to me that the reason why we continue to see the U.S. corn basis stay so strong is the reduction in the supplies. But the report also suggests that the global competition is going to be very, very stiff, and that the domestic market won't really have to compete with the export market because those competing supplies continue to build. And so it's really getting to a point now where if we're going to find value again, I think it goes back to the beans being closer on the world market stage to being competitive than the corn or the wheat is. And here again, it would point me right back to where we began. The beans losing $1.13 should start to show up in the world markets. Beans should be probably the leader in the first one to bottom here when it comes to the row crops.
Is there any indication that the export market for beans will begin to pick up? It has woefully lagged at the beginning of this marketing year.
I think there is. I think the meal market is going to put the low end for the beans. The meal exports for the last 3 weeks have been at or above the expected or the highest number on the range of estimates. We continue to hear and see crushers not get the quality that they want, so they're crushing more beans for the same type of protein content, probably building up oil supplies at the same time as doing that. I really do think that as we get into December, we're going to see the South Americans also reduce their exports as we go forward. It was interesting to note that the South American, the Brazilian government in particular, came out and reduced the 11-12 soybean crop quite dramatically this week, and I think the trade's kind of overrun that and not really dealt with that too much. I think it was CONAB came out and said that they're looking at an 11-12 crop at around 71.5 to 73 million tons, versus 72.2 to 73.3. Bottom line, if that's confirmed, that would be a drop of about 3 to 5% from last year's 75.3 crop, and that and one of the newswire agencies said that would be one of the biggest annual drops in several decades. I haven't confirmed that, but it sure sounds right. So I think we priced in perfect weather in South America and a huge crop, and at the same time we're starting to see the meal market really show some strength.
Did that organization give a reason for the drop in the South American soybean crop?
Yeah, excellent point. The biggest issue was that they went towards the corn. And today, before we got on the line with one another, Informa came out with their new estimates for their soybean and corn acreage for 2012. They, too, are taking the same line of thinking as CONAB, saying that the corn acres are going up. They're now up to 94 million for 2012. Compared to 93.1 on their last estimate and what the trade is probably trading right now. They also took their soybean plantings here for this country for 2012 down to 76.1 versus 77 previously. So we are seeing a trend where this high price in corn versus the lower price in beans over the last couple, 3 months is starting to get traction in terms of how producers think. And it's interesting to note to you, having said that, this last week I've taken a lot more client calls and producer calls when D's corn, 12 corn, went below $6, Todd, on this bull spreading that we've seen since the report. They're really wondering whether they really want to push the corn acres. So I think the Informa numbers may be right when it comes to looking at the past, but this next few months is really going to determine whether we bring bean acres back if corn in the 12 December contract can't get back above 6.
Is your opinion that the corn acres in South America are primarily in Argentina, where they would be corn, or are they second crop corn out of parts of Brazil, or a combination of both? I would think it might make a great deal of difference as to how much corn there would be available coming out of that area.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. Argentina certainly wants to increase their supplies because they're looking at maybe turning their export market back on again through the government easing restrictions on exports. So I think that probably the producers there in Argentina have taken note of that and assume that that's going to happen. And so they probably put more acreage in there. The weather down in Paraguay and Brazil, based upon the clients I have down there, has been almost perfect, especially these later rains. And so I think that you probably did see a bigger second crop corn crop come on. Here again, I think it goes back to I'm starting to hear more and more and more about the quality seed issue, not just from one seed dealer, but I'm talking about all across the swath for the United States 2012 corn crop. I think the South Americans are probably picking up on that as well, and probably both countries have increased their corn acreage because they're hearing the same thing we are, that really good quality seed is going to be in probably historically tight supply as we go into 2012 and as we go into the spring.
So fewer acres in South America, hectares in South America, then would set the stage for soybeans to be exported out of the U.S. and support the corn market?
Yeah, and I think that goes back to where is China at? We are down with China's exports or China's imports into their country, U.S. bean exports, but overall China's not down hardly at all from a standpoint of their total exports that are going out from both South America and the United States. So China still seems to be a major buyer, and like we talked about on the morning comments this morning, there is a new type of trade Asian trade agreement that is being worked on, and that would even open up more, I think, to Japan and some of the other Southeast Asian countries. That would be very, very beneficial, I think, for oil seeds in particular.
Mike, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I have to tell you, Dave and I drove a Prius to Kansas City.
I bet it was the best ride of your life, wasn't it, Todd?
It blows around in the wind a little bit, I have to tell you.
It's like driving a cardboard car, isn't it?
I won't go there.
Take care, sir.
You too. Thanks much. Right, Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He is in Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on a Friday afternoon. Support comes from the Farm Doc Project at the University of Illinois, holding a series of 5 Illinois Farm Economics Summit meetings December 12th through the 16th to discuss and analyze the most pressing economic issues facing Illinois producers. Registration and details on their website, farmdoc.illinois.edu. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. Please do visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now up next, the Congressional Supercommittee tasked with trimming $1.3 trillion with a T dollars from the federal deficit is expected to make some recommendations later this month. The chairs and ranking members of the House and Senate Ag Committees are calling for $23 billion in cuts. But details are sketchy. Illinois Public Media Agricultural Director Dave Dickey yesterday asked Ryan Bennett, manager of public policy for the National Grain and Feed Association, about NGFA concerns in writing the next farm bill.
Well, obviously not going through the traditional farm bill process is something that's very concerning to us and to many other members of Congress, for that matter. You know, these kinds of things are normally hashed out over a long period of time, and we're able to really delve into the specifics and get some really good hearings to hear back what actually needs to happen and really get into the weeds of some of these things. I think, you know, there was already a push to simplify some of these programs, but I think with having to write a farm bill in such a short period of time, you know, I think that's going to make things even more consolidated and with some of these programs more simplified. So that could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing, but that's just kind of the trend.
I wonder if because of the collapsed timeline, you're going to see programs written that will have unintended consequences.
Yeah, I think that you definitely could. I honestly, you look at CRP, which we talk a lot about, as a way that you could give back some of those some budget savings into this program. You know, some of the things that we feel needs to happen with the program are not going to be solved in this kind of process. It's a longer term reform. This is not a very easy, simple program to delve into. There's some very complex and specific problems. And I think that without really taking the time and going into some of these things, I think they're only going to be able to cut in the short term a certain number of acres out of that program in a safe and environmentally sensitive manner. But you can go back in and start to kind of look at some longer term reforms that would take place maybe if we were going through a normal farm bill process, and then you'd be able to single out some of those more non-environmentally sensitive acres to get back into production to meet booming global and domestic demand for grains and oilseeds. So,
on the super committee, there is only one farm legislator, that Max Baucus, a Western lawmaker. Could it be that he will have to do all the heavy lift, carry all the water for the farm bill as it relates to working with the super committee?
Well, I feel like the super committee has really, to this point, signaled that they're not going to dive into the specifics of some of these farm policy proposals, and they are leaving it up to kind of the chairman of the Senate and House Agriculture Committees. Now, if I was a new member of Congress and I was amped up to get working on my first, you know, agriculture might be my only committee that I sit on, and I'm amped up to go through the farm bill process, and all of a sudden I'm cut out of some of these negotiations. That might not be something that sits well with me, but for the most part, it seems like they're going to present the task of cutting $23 billion to the chairman of the Senate and House Agriculture Committees and let them figure out a way to get that number. And that's actually something that was very appealing to folks like Colin Peterson, who were saying that they thought that agriculture would be better off going through this process rather than going through the traditional farm bill process, where they might have to deal with some deeper budgetary cuts.
Ryan Bennett with the National Grain and Feed Association. He spoke with our Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. We're sitting down with Dan Bossy. He's from AgriSource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. Dan, thanks for taking the time with us. USDA released a report this week. It showed some changes in the marketplace, only a $23 million bushel change in the ending stocks for corn. Has anything really fundamentally changed on the world scape for you?
I don't think so, Todd. I mean, as we looked at the report, we thought the drop in corn yield was interesting. We think there still may be more to come as we get closer to 145. The corn balance sheet in our work still looks rather tight in the year ahead. But with the world having more feed wheat and Ukraine being a more aggressive seller of corn, the question you got to have is this a spread and basis market or is this going to be flat price? Our view is it's more spread and basis relationship than flat price.
Tell me what that means.
Well, that means that corn may struggle on rallies to 685 or 720 in our work. It's the second year of high prices. This is the second year in a row that the U.S. has had a crop problem. Some rationing has been carried forward. But the big difference from this year and last year is that last year we had an export market. We had grain, corn in particular, heading down the river to the Gulf. This year, because of Ukraine and it's selling corn to the Japanese and some of our more traditional customers, that grain flow is diminished, and so it really becomes ethanol and domestic that has to be rationed. That's probably in the second half of the crop year post-Valentine's Day. We like corn on breaks, but there's no reason to get excited about it. And for farmers, we think they need to be using strong rallies and cash and basis to be making sales.
Tell me about Ukraine just a bit. First year that they really have exported corn. They're the breadbasket of the former Soviet system. They have a river, much like the Mississippi, that allows them access to the globe.
I tell my farm clients, if there's ever a place you should visit, head to Kiev, take a gander out into farmland, because you will just fall in love with Ukraine. Black soils, 28% of the world's black soils, those black soils go down anywhere between 30 and 70 feet. No rocks, which surprised me. Any of us that pick rocks in the field, this is a great place to live. The productive capacity is just immense. You can get 120, 130 bushel corn yield without fertilizer. We can only imagine what happens when they find nitrogen. So it is one of those happening places in the world. The problem with Ukraine is the government. Again, we're still, you know, it's harkening back to pseudo-communist days. Corruption is still rather widespread. We don't know when farmland can actually be owned. We right now can own leases on farmland from the old communist state. But all of this means that the Ukraine this year will export about 450 to 470 million bushels of corn. That's a big jump from the 110 or 120 last year. That corn is going to displace U.S. exports. We also are seeing the Argentinians coming with a big potential crop. And so our slice of the world corn trade is down. It's going to be 43% by our work this year. It's the lowest level we've seen going back to the early 70s.
Did it surprise you that that trade was made with Japan instead of China?
It did. In fact, the Chinese are still not willing to take Ukrainian corn for phytosanitary reasons. It's something called Canadian thistle, from what we understand. But the Japanese, we thought, were going to take a cargo or two to test corn quality out of Ukraine. From what we're hearing, we think they've now taken 18 to 24 cargoes, maybe moving up towards a million tons or more when this is all said and done. And unfortunately, that business is coming right out of the U.S.
Give me your outlook for soybean, please.
Soybeans at the moment probably are the bottom of the totem pole in terms of fundamentals. U.S. soybean exports are in trouble. We've cut our estimate another 50 million bushels from where USDA is, so we're moving end stock estimates up. Soybeans struggle in any rally to 1250 without a South American weather problem, and if we have good South American weather, $11 spot soybean futures is not unreasonable.
And wheat, please.
And on the wheat side of thing, it's pretty much tied to corn, which the corn market we see is kind of caught between 6.25 in the downside and maybe 7.25 in the upside. That means if we look at historical relationships to wheat, maybe 50 cents under because of what's going on in the Ukraine and Black Sea. That means that Chicago wheat should find great support between 575 and 590. Outside chance we could rally to $7 on some weather calamity, whether it's Ukraine or the southern U.S. plains in the spring. But really that's a phenomena that will happen after Valentine's Day as the crop is going into the dormancy right now. Not heading into best of states, but we're not going to get worried about it till we come out.
Thanks so much, Dan.
You're very welcome, Todd.
Dan Bossi is with AgriSource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. We'll say goodbye to some of our radio stations now. For the rest of you, I'll return in just a couple of minutes.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
It's National Sunday Day. It's also St. Martin's Day, patron of harvests, horses, and innkeepers. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, chrysanthemums were introduced to England from China. Both the greens and blossoms are edible and are especially popular in Japan, China, and Vietnam. In 1933, the first great dust storm occurred on the Great Plains. A massive drought and decades of farming techniques, where the fertile soils of the Great Plains were exposed through the removal of prairie grasses, led to clouds of black dust that made the sky appear black all the way to Chicago. In 1938, Mary Mallon died at North Brother Island, New York City. Better known as Typhoid Mary, she was an infamous household cook who was responsible for major outbreaks of typhoid in the New York City area in 1904, 1907, and 1914. Mallon's case showed that a person could be a carrier without showing any outward signs of being sick, and it led to most of the health code laws on the books today. And in 1973, Arturi Virtanen died, a Finnish biochemist. His investigations led to the discovery of the AIV method. He found that cows fed silage preserved with a mixture of hydrochloric and sulfuric acid produced milk the same in taste from that of cows fed on normal fodder and were just as rich in vitamins A and C. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to us from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. Now up next, many farmers in the Midwest have been very disappointed with corn after corn yields. There's something wrong with the rotation. I'll have more on the economics of planting corn after corn and whether or not it's a rotation worth using despite the yield drag. Farmers in the state of Illinois have been sorely disappointed with corn after corn yields. They're reporting a significant yield drag. Now, farm management specialist Gary Schnitke decided to use that information in hopes of helping producers make a better decision about which crop to plant after corn next spring.
What sort of yield do you have to have corn after corn before you switch to soybeans, and how much lower that is than corn after soybeans? What we found is that you could have yield drags of between 17 bushels per acre, and that's in southern Illinois, and 28 bushels an acre, which is central Illinois high productivity. If you have those sorts of yield drags, more than that, it's more profitable to plant soybeans than it is corn, given that corn is following corn.
Here is how Schnitke came up with how many fewer bushels corn after corn could yield than, say, corn after soybeans, the yield drag bushels, and still have it be a break-even prospect. The calculations start with the soybean yield number.
So what we did was we took a 56-bushel yield in central Illinois, took a $13.50 price, and subtracted from that $300 of cost to non-land cost for soybeans and came up with a soybean return. We then looked at, all right, so that gave us a net return. To that, then we knew what the cost of producing corn after corn are. We estimated that, and that would be $530 an acre. And also took a corn price of $5.50, calculated the yield on corn that equated to 56 bushels of soybeans, and it's 167 bushels of corn. So if you get less than 167 bushels of corn after corn, it's more profitable to plant soybeans than it is corn after corn.
Again, Schnitke suggests if corn after corn yields less than 167 bushels to the acre on a central Illinois farm, well, then it would be more profitable to plant soybeans next season.
If it's 167 bushels, that's 28 bushels yield drag. We've seen in the past couple of years it's been more than that. But over time, you know, 10 to 20 bushels is probably about what we would expect over time.
Schnitke says he hasn't really solved the crop rotation puzzle, but that the numbers should give farmers a better handle on how to evaluate which crop to plant next spring. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Closing Mark Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It comes to you from the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. I'm Todd Gleason. This week at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention, you have a great weekend.